Hey guys, welcome back to the Reflection Room. I'm really excited about today's video, actually. This is a little bit different than what we've done in the past. If you've been with us over the last few months, you know that there have been a few shows that we've just given some reactions to as some of the therapists that work at the practice. With everything that's happening in this world today, I feel like I've been talking to a few clients throughout the week, and it's like we're all dealing with larger systemic issues, and then there's like work issues and community issues and family issues and individual issues. And so I'm like, you know what? Let's just do something funny and fun and have a really good time with mental health. Sometimes mental health can feel very heavy, and it is in many ways. You know, there's a lot of struggle and a lot of pain, a lot of hurt, disappointment that comes along with mental health problems or mental illness. But, you know, sometimes it can be really beneficial to also laugh a little and have a little bit of fun with this. So I thought I would do a reaction to a small a bit that talks a little bit about her struggles with anxiety and depression. And I thought, you know, why not, as a therapist who's been in the field now for I guess probably close to 2 decades, kind of look at it through the lens of a therapist, but then also just as a regular human being that kind of struggles with her own stuff too from time to time. I particularly love how relatable this video actually is. And so as we go through, and we'll watch the whole thing, it's really short, it's less than 5 minutes long. She talks about her own personal struggles and actually uses quite a few really unique stories and metaphors and ways to just kind of drive some of the points home. So I find it to be really relatable, and specifically about the part where she's talking about depression. There's like one section where she said, not to give too much away, but she says something about like how there are times where she feels like she can't remember why she feels the way that she does. And then when she thinks about it, then like all of the reasons why she's feeling really depressed kind of comes flooding in. And I thought, you know, that makes sense. It's pretty relatable there. And it, and I thought, well, let me just give it a clinical term or name, at least at that specific point. Here goes like my geeky side kind of creeping in. But, you know, whenever we've worked with a client and we've completed an evaluation and various assessments, oftentimes we might arrive at a specific diagnosis or disorder that we feel like the client meets the criteria for. And so there actually is something called, we can call them modifiers or even subtypes. And so you just tack them on to the end of a specific diagnosis to provide a little bit more clarification on the specific way that the client is experiencing that specific diagnosis or disorder. And so when she talks about that, and what came to mind was how oftentimes we could add recurring depression to clinical depression as a way to really highlight how sometimes depression can really feel that way, where it's like experiencing dips and then you come out of the dips. And then you go right back into the dips. And so it's just not one specific episode, but it's recurring for any one particular person. But so I thought we could get started, maybe watch a bit of the bit, and then maybe I'll pause it and then give some of my feedback and thoughts, and then we'll kind of go through the video that way. So, all right, let's enjoy this together.
We did it. We're all here. Oh, you're here. You're here. I didn't think you'd come, but there you are. So I made a recent realization in my life that I'd like to share with you guys. There is no way to pick up pills that you've spilled on the ground without looking like a total human red flag. You know, there's just no way to be like, this is what I meant to do, and everything is going great. Like, as soon as it happens, you're always like, huh? I'm so sorry. I need these! Mama's medicine. Like, it immediately turns into a sad one-woman show that nobody agreed to attend. No, I do take a healthy diet of pills, but they are prescribed. Though I would say, you know, pills, they're a great anytime snack. They come through in that way.
Okay, so what really actually made me laugh when I saw this was probably like 2-3 days ago. I purchased this new supplement that my doctor recommended. I don't know. We'll see if it's worth it. But anyways, and it was pretty pricey. And I'm not a morning person at all. And so I went to open it up the first morning that I had them. And I don't know what it was. I must have had butterfingers or something. And they all went all over the floor. And my dog was there. And I was like, well, first of all, this was very expensive. So I need to collect them all. And then second of all, I was like, and also, I don't know what it would do to you. So don't pick up any. But I was like, yeah, that is extremely relatable. You know, I love how she highlights in a funny way the stigma that's associated still, unfortunately, with psychotropic medication or medication that's taken because of some kind of mental health disorder or illness. And she makes light of it. But I think she's kind of highlighting, at least in my opinion, the fact that there still exists a stigma out there. I hear it a little bit more in our counseling sessions with clients. You know, we talk about it a little bit more freely. So I might have like a skewed perspective of it. I see us going in the right direction where a lot of clients are feeling a little bit more comfortable disclosing that they're working with a psychiatrist. They might put that in an intake form so that we're aware of the medication that they've been prescribed. Sometimes we'll even talk a little bit about the side effects. We can even be accountability partners for our clients who are needing to maintain medication management. But I do find that in my personal life that there are times in certain circles where I can see that a person might be a little bit hesitant to share that they either have taken medication for anxiety or maybe like an antidepressant. I don't know exactly what contributes to that. I think at this point with social media being all over, it's just so prevalent. You know, it's like the tips of all of our fingers. And then of course, there's a lot of movies and shows that kind of depict mental illness. And sometimes we'll poke fun at it or mock it or even present it in a very extreme way. That I think there still are people sometimes, and, you know, people can correct me wrong here if I am, but I think there still is that feeling of, I don't want people to think that I'm crazy or I am not in control of my mind or behaviors or interactions. And so there's so much judgment that oftentimes is out there that I think anytime that we feel like in our personal lives, we can somehow control the narrative of what people think about us. We try to, and unfortunately, I think mental health and psychotropic medication still falls under the umbrella. But I thought her story about picking up the pills was actually very funny because it had just happened to me a few days ago. So,
but no, I suffer from depression. It's a great way to start off a set, you know. Sorry to go blue right away, but it's true. No, I've had it my whole life. And, you know, it's like a lot of times I'll feel sad for no reason. But then I'll remember some of the reasons, you know? I'm like, this actually makes a lot of sense. This adds up. There are certain types of weather that are better for depressives. Like, I love it when it rains. Reminds me why I got in the whole sad game, you know? Keeps me grounded. Whenever it's like pouring outside, as a sad person, you can turn to any random optimist on the street and just be like, hey, you're in my world now.
So I'll stop it there. As someone who tends to be myself, I identify as someone that lean more towards more of like a melancholy personality. Just naturally, I thought that was really funny when she said, when it's rainy and it's like, you're in my world now. But I do want to kind of go back a little bit too. I meant to share this earlier, but some people might think we're making light of mental health, and that is not the case at all. Or there might be a thought of comedy and mental health. How do those two things really go together? And I think she does a great job of really kind of articulating her experiences. So there is something out there called laughter therapy. I don't know how many like peer-reviewed articles have been completed on that specific topic. I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. But nonetheless, I will say that I think it is like common knowledge at this point that, you know, like humor, laughter, even smiling sometimes can boost one's mood. And what it does is it really kind of helps release endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, And so there has been research that has highlighted the fact that there is a connection there between humor and laughter and smiling, and then the boost that it can oftentimes have on our overall mood. I love the whole raining thing. I thought that was really funny. And just the thought of it, right? Like oftentimes people will come into counseling sessions and it can be really challenging at times, actually. Let me say this in all seriousness. I think it can be really difficult at times to answer questions that appear very simple, like, can you explain to me what any given day feels like when you are experiencing a depressive episode or a dip in mood? And, you know, it seems like it could be an easy question on the surface, because we're the ones kind of experiencing that, if that's what we're, you know, sharing about or disclosing. But sometimes it can be really difficult. It's very challenging, actually, to find language to kind of describe some of the mental health struggles that we might experience. And this is one thing that sometimes clients will actually say, that it feels like there's this dark cloud that just kind of looms over them, especially if their depression is not like situational or episodic in nature. Like if it's really difficult for them to pinpoint what exactly is causing that for them, they might say, I don't know, and nothing really big has happened or happened in those moments, but I just feel like this dark cloud, it just kind of follows me everywhere. And so I thought that was on point, actually, when she said the whole raining thing. And then we do know that this like gloomy, rainy, kind of dark atmosphere can really have an impact in reality on people's overall mood. Hence why a lot of times people, especially up north, will experience what we've come to call a seasonal affective disorder. So ironically enough, the acronym is SAD. Aww. But anyway, I thought when she presented that, she says it in a very light-hearted, kind of funny way. And the metaphor she's using is really funny, where she's like, welcome to my world on a rainy day, to those darn optimists. You know, and so I could understand that as someone who kind of leans more towards the melancholy side. But in reality, there really is a lot of truth to what she's talking about. So I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I relate to people who have self-doubt. I have a lot of anxiety. Don't be mistaken by the sassy drag queen stage persona. I know it's confusing, but yeah, I have a lot of anxiety. I don't know. I feel like it's weirder to not have anxiety than to have it, because I feel like if you're not scared, you're not paying attention, you know? Like, I feel like if you open a newspaper today, skim maybe 3 headlines, you're just like, seems cool. It's like, what? Everything's on fire. Even the newspaper is on fire. Like, what are you so chill about? And, you know, sometimes when you tell people you have anxiety, they're always like, well, you know, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. It's like, okay, have you checked out some of fear's work? Like pretty much churning out solid gold hits, making some great points, rarely misfires.
Oh, I love that. I mean, those are good quotes, like rarely misfires and then really kind of churns out some, I think she said some solid gold hits. And so I thought that was funny. So what she's describing actually when she says, and some of you guys might be able to relate to this, but when she talks about opening up a newspaper, although I'm like, how many people actually read a newspaper nowadays? But this was 3 years ago, but still, you know, anyways. But when you open up your phone, let's say your alarm goes off, you shut off the alarm. Maybe you're not ready to get out of bed yet. So what's the first thing that we do? We check our phones, right? And so you're looking at text messages, and maybe you're opening up the news app, or maybe you pop open TikTok or Instagram and you're just kind of looking to see what are the first few posts that come up in your feed, possibly your work email, if anybody responded to the email that you sent late last night before you were wrapping up at work. And so I think she brings up a good point that with someone who struggles with anxiety and sometimes symptoms of depression, they might experience something that's called like a hypervigilance. And so hypervigilance is when we are a little bit more sensitive and open to potential threats, essentially. And it actually is one of the criteria for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And so where the average person might allow like certain stimuli and things to come at them or pass them and not really feel a heightened sense of arousal or fear or worry, someone who struggles with some kind of anxiety or depression might actually experience a really high sense of arousal as things are coming at them, or they're reading things, hearing things, coming in contact with things. And so they find themselves experiencing what we refer to as hypervigilance. And so I thought that she was really spot on with that.
And like, if you don't have anxiety, the way I would describe it is like there's an edgy improv group in your brain. And it just needs like a one-word suggestion to spin like countless scenarios that no one's comfortable with. Like the whole time you're just like, when will this show be over? I just came to be supportive. None of these thoughts have a future.
Okay, so I'll pause it there. I didn't want to miss this part where she calls it the edgy improv group in your brain. For someone who has struggled with anxiety for many, many years, and that's something that I disclose oftentimes with my clients when we're talking about anxiety, I've even, you know, spoken about that with family members and friends, even on my social media, but I 100% can relate to this when she was talking about that. And it got me thinking about what we oftentimes, this might sound a little bit more relatable how I'm about to word it, but we refer to these moments as like the what if scenarios, right? So it's almost like we enter into this endless loop or spiral, probably more so a loop because you really don't go anywhere, of like all of these what if scenarios. And a lot of times, most of the time, 99% of the time, we're thinking of situations or scenarios that are not rooted in reality. They're rooted in our irrational, illogical fears. And so I thought that was really funny. And also, a lot of times, we refer to them as what-if scenarios. Sometimes clients will actually describe it this way, where they feel like they are trapped in their head. So I don't know if anybody can relate to that, the way I just worded it, but where you just feel like, can I just turn it off? Can I get a break from my brain? And it's less about the external stimuli, and it's more about what she's talking about, which is like this internal edgy improv group that's in our brain that is just coming up, firing off all of these one-liners or thoughts or fears or worries, and it just feels like we're just trapped up here in our heads.
And, you know, I have all kinds of anxiety. I have social anxiety, which is ironically one of the most relatable kinds. It's a little weird. Sometimes mine will get so bad I can't even talk to babies without getting self-conscious. Yeah, like the whole time I'm just like, oh, what if I'm not an interesting shape or color? You know? It's like, make a fist, try to relate. Take out your keys. Meet them on their level. Yeah, social interaction is terrifying. I also hate this one. I hate when you're going in for the handshake, but the other person is going in for the fist bump. And then you realize you're in front of a mirror and you don't know who you are anymore.
Okay, so I thought that was funny, the last piece about social anxiety. She was using the example of a baby, which obviously was, I hope, was a bit exaggerated. But she said something that really stood out to me. I don't remember exactly how she worded it, but she said something like, trying to figure out how to relate to them. And that was really spot on when it comes to social anxiety. For those of you that might be a little bit unfamiliar with social anxiety, sometimes there's a misunderstanding, actually, too, of what exactly it is. This is the way I always describe it. I think someone who, every time they go out into the world, so whether it is a social gathering, a family event, a concert, maybe it's a work meeting, a conference, festival, a theme park, anytime they're anywhere out there where there are people that they are not extremely close to, that they don't have a very close relationship with, imagine them kind of drawing these thought bubbles over everyone's heads, and they're kind of plugging in what they think the person is thinking about them. And so people that struggle with social anxiety, oftentimes there's this worry or fear that the opinions of others is just negative about them and who they are, how they look, how they're behaving, how they're acting. So when she's and sometimes I'm trying to think of how to relate to them. I was like, yeah, I mean, the way she just described that was perfect, because when someone who is struggling with social anxiety, what oftentimes is happening is they're thinking that everybody's having these negative opinions or thoughts about them. And so that makes them feel just out of place, very uncomfortable, very awkward, which of course doesn't help the anxiety. It just kind of spikes it. But the solution is oftentimes either how can I minimize myself and make myself very small so that I'm not noticed as much, or what she said, which is how can I relate to them, whoever them is, you know, whoever's in the group that's around them. And then that even feels a little bit disingenuous or insincere, because then the person is no longer being themselves fully, but they're trying to somehow be a chameleon and kind of assume traits of the people that are around them, which again, then ends up spiking the anxiety. So I thought it was funny, came across it, and why not have a little bit of laughter in the midst of just, sometimes we feel like things, like she said, even the newspaper is on fire. And so I thought, why not take some time to really kind of laugh about it, joke about it, but then also talk a little bit of a seriousness about it too. And really the main point too I wanted to drive home actually was, when we see people that use their platforms in this way, celebrities oftentimes have been doing it too recently, or even when we share stories with each other about some of our struggles, like me sharing just a few minutes ago that I've struggled with my own anxiety, I feel like that kind of normalizes things and it helps everybody feel like they're not alone in their struggles. And so hopefully that provided you that feeling today. If you find yourself struggling or feeling like, am I the only one that's really dealing with this? The answer is no. But as always, our recommendation is to make sure that you go and speak to a mental health professional and get personal help. Well, thanks so much for spending these few minutes with me. I hope you had a good laugh just like I did. And as always, keep reflecting.